This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you very much, Keith Cam, for the news. My name is Rich Bradbury. It is Thursday, of course. I'm joined in the studio by tech maestro, Mr.
Jeff Sandu.
And the terrible...
Excuse
wonderful.
Me.
Hello.
Beautiful audiograph.
Just
hello.
How we're going to start the show.
See,
yes.
I was going to start off with Terrible Twosome, but I use that all the time. Yeah, right? Yeah. So we've got a trio in the studio. I mean, Arvin sat in the corner trying to keep quiet, but we know at some point in the show he'll be dipping in and saying something. Anyway.
Especially when we have some story that he's a big fan of.
He's a big fan of Amazon, right?
Yeah.
And we've got some Amazon story. He's got a big grin on his face already.
He's
look
really
at
happy.
Anyway, ladies and gents, if you want to get in touch with our show this afternoon, we are with you all the way through until 1 o'clock. Like it or not, if you want to get in touch, 018-789-8899 or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. Starting off with Danger Danger, don't let your kids use apps.
Yes.
At all.
Well, for now at least. Well, here's a warning to all parents with young kids who are tuned in right now. You know those harmless looking kids app that your child has installed on your phone with the cute cartoon characters and the funny noises, the one that seemed perfectly harmless? Well, people... this is really a monster in disguise. According to a new study of almost 6,000 children's apps in the Google Play Store, most of these apps are reportedly collecting personally identifiable data and are transmitting it over the internet. And from there, this data could be shared with advertisers. And let me remind you, this data is not erasable and could follow your child as a targeted profile into their teens and adulthood for the rest of their lives.
What? So they're tracking kids from the day they're born until they get into, oh my word.
Yes, so they're following their progress, right? Now, if you're thinking this is just the weird-looking apps from nameless developers, you're wrong. According to this article from Co-Design, even an app from Disney named Where's My Water, which is free, is transmitting...
I've played that game.
Why have you played
I've
that
played,
game?
It's such a good puzzle game, Rich. Don't look at me
Where's
like that.
Where's My Water?
Where's My Water?
Yes, it's so cute. It's like this crocodile where you have to connect the bathtub to the bathtub as the water, so you got to build pipes around it. It's a fun game. Arvin's nodding his head. He gets what I'm saying. Of course, he's excited for God of War tomorrow, but, you know, it's a completely different scale altogether. But Where's My Water is such a fun game, and they were tracking me?
Yes, and someone out there has your data, Jeff.
I'm pretty sure more than one person has Jeff's data.
Well,
anyway, carry on.
Yeah, didn't know that what's we call data.
So if you're wondering, if you're wondering, like me, how is this possible, especially with like a big name like Disney?
Yeah.
Well, You'd think that we'd have law to protect children's privacy at the very least, right? And we do. It's something called COPPA, and it mandates common sense rules like that apps need parental permission before collecting a child's data, and that whoever is collecting the said data cannot share it with anyone else. But the problem is COPPA is far from perfect. Developers apparently simply ignore its rules, and maybe they just don't work hard enough to enforce them in the first place. And according to this article, Google didn't bother to properly police developers as well.
You see, the problem is with a lot of these apps is and it's the same as what we've said for the end user agreement, right? When you are signing up to use that app, if you want to use it, you generally have to agree to the terms.
You can't use it.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
You can't opt out and say, okay, I want to play the game, but I'd rather you don't track my data. You can't do that for most apps, right?
Yeah. And if it's kids that are installing these apps, you know, without parental supervision or with parental supervision, as a parent yourselves, I mean, would you actually be reading those terms and conditions?
I don't even read it for my own apps.
You've been playing the game without realizing.
And apparently fines for like privacy data breaches and stuff like that for each violation. Each violation is about $40,000 USD.
But for each violation?
For each violation. The thing is, there's a poor tracking of these violations. So without real penalties, would you be so naive to think that these developers would self-police?
Especially somebody not like Disney, anyway.
Well, when you have things like common sense rules, that itself kind of just go like, wow, we've gone to that level now that we gotta have rules for common sense. Common sense means it's a common thing, right?
Yeah.
So now we have rules.
We've
for this
agreed
common sense.
Commonly that it makes sense.
Yeah. So that itself clearly shows that we can't just leave it up to these developers to, you know, we can't just trust them to know that, hey, there are these certain rules and you would definitely follow them, right? Because you're a big company. We can't just trust. Hey, Facebook is a good example.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if Facebook and Google can muck these things up, you know, how can you trust like these small time developers to do well? A better job at it, right?
Where's My Water is being uninstalled as we speak.
Yes, and also this problem apparently extends to children's smartwatches that are sold to parents for safety and security, but have some lax privacy standards as well due to the bad apps.
So if they change this, like it all comes down again to the terms and conditions that you have to agree in order to use these services, right? So a lot of people, like even Facebook was saying, it's like the Congress said to Facebook, like, you know, it's horrible. Like, you know, if nobody reads this and it's, you know, 17 pages long, blah, blah, blah. If they change it to a point where, you know, let's say a pop-up comes up and says, like, if you want to use this game, we will track you and sell your data, yes or no. Would it, if it's that simple, would it change things, though?
Of course it would. Yeah, yeah, it definitely.
But then if you
would,
say no, you can't use it at all.
Well, I think there'd be some parents who in the end would, you know, after what we've seen in the debacle of the last few weeks, I think some parents would generally say, you know what, forget it, you're not using that app. As much as you want to play it, we'd rather your data don't be shared.
Some parents might do that the first time, the second time, the third time, but due to pester
mommy,
power...
Mommy, yeah.
I don't know if they'd be able to withstand that.
Right, yeah. Right.
I mean, the thing is, it's funny you say that, and talking about these end-user license agreements, and I read something very recently where there was a group, an NGO, and I believe they were in the US, who they went out and they bought a brand new iPhone. Mm-hmm. And what they did was they were going to read all of the end user license agreements and from end to end without stopping for every piece of software that's on the phone, including ownership of the phone. From beginning to end, they didn't stop. It took 31 hours to read the whole thing.
Oh, my.
Right? 31.
31 hours.
Wow. So I can't even do 5 minutes of reading
exactly.
those kind of
Exactly. So when
things,
you have 31 hours worth of stuff that you're supposed to get through before you decide, you're just going to, you know, put your hands up and say, you know what, let's just do it anyway.
It's not even written in plain English.
Correct.
You know, no common man would really understand what exactly does this mean.
Right.
And
okay.
like 31 hours keeping that app open to read the terms and conditions, it would...
I mean, it's sorry for those people.
Right, so it was like, this is the agreement for your phone, this is the agreement for using Safari, this is the agreement for using this, this is the agreement for using that.
Sheesh.
Shouldn't be like that at all.
Yeah, but you know, until these privacy laws are sorted out, all these issues are sorted out, the most obvious answer might be the hardest for most parents to consider. Maybe you should just not let your kids use apps for the time being and maybe just play Tom and Jerry for them on TV.
Yeah, or just give them traditional games, you know.
How
just
long
saying.
Is that going to last? How long
true.
Is that going to keep
true.
Them occupied?
And they'll put it in
really?
The mouth as well. you know. All right, ladies and gents, I suppose we'd like to ask you a question at home. You know, is something like this, would it make you, I don't know, would you reconsider installing certain apps then on your phone if it meant that your kid's data is being tracked? Right. Let's start off with that and let's see what
we'll
get.
See what we get. Yeah.
01878988899 or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. Moving on to story number two about Amazon. Dun, dun, dun. Amazon is launching international shopping from the US.
Ooh.
So they're expanding the reach of their US store. The tech giant has launched a new international shopping feature that will allow people in several countries to buy products from its US marketplace.
Please be Malaysia. Please be Malaysia.
Those
be
products Malaysia. Are please then exported from the US, according to Reuters, which earlier reported on the move. Amazon customers will be able to buy more than 45 million products currently available in the company's US store. Expanding Amazon's US marketplace to international markets could be a boon for the retail giant. Could be. Dramatically expanding the customer base opens to Amazon to make more customers and could grow sales, of course, to the US store. Still, there are some limitations in Amazon's shopping program. According to Reuters again, international shopping is available online for Amazon's mobile web page and via its mobile apps. For now, the service is available in 6 languages: Spanish, English, Chinese, Brazilian, Portuguese, and German. They're also limiting international shopping to 25 currencies, but plans to expand its support for both more currencies and more languages up in the coming months. In addition to purchase price and shipping costs, Amazon's international store will also estimate duty costs for customers to import their desired products to their respective countries. Let me let you into a little secret.
You've not answered
wait,
please. Is this Malaysia?
I know. Let me let you into a secret. I reinstalled the Amazon app on my phone. I checked for an item that I was interested in. I checked to see if it displayed that result in local currency. Mm-hmm. I then checked the shipping costs.
They ship to
Malaysia and they display the cost in Malaysian ringgit. And apparently, for most stores, if you spend over 100 ringgit, shipping is free.
Wow. All right. Yes. So, because some items you can already buy from Amazon, you can ship it over, but it's done in US dollar, right?
Right.
And then you will see it when it's charged in your PayPal or when you charge it to your, you know, I don't think you could use your local credit card.
You can now.
Yes. So, yeah, that for me makes great sense because you have to link it to your PayPal. PayPal has a little bit of a charge, and then there's a currency conversion.
My
as well.
Bank account has been hacked many times.
And a lot
thanks
of people,
to the PayPal app. Thank you very much, PayPal.
So PayPal, you know, is obviously. A lot of people would like it to be just one provider, right? So
correct.
You deal with just Amazon directly instead of a third party. So
yeah.
Malaysia is in this list.
Yes.
Okay, thank God.
Yeah. So Arvind, you can smile again now. You can now get your bonus ready for when it comes in and you know, set up all your Blu-rays to go out. Anyway, let us know, folks. Again, would you be keeping track of the apps that you install on your devices for your kids? How dangerous do you think it is? Let us know. 018-789-8899. Get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. We're going to take a short break with some Weezer and Perfect Situation. When we get back, it is the perfect selfishness of mapping apps. We use Waze, we use Google Maps, we use all of this stuff. Apparently, they're creating more problems than solutions.
Aha! I knew it.
You knew it. Mm. Right. Music, Weezer. Perfect Situation here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with...
Jeff Sundu.
And...
Audrey Rudge.
The wonderful Audrey Rudge.
I should get that right now. Correction there.
Nice, Rich. Nice.
She's going to slap me later. Okay. Go on.
No.
Okay. So we've been asking you since the top of the show, folks. The story that we started off with was about these dangerous apps that are being installed on...
track your kids.
They're tracking your kids. What kind of stuff are they doing, Audrey?
It's just those fun apps that your kids play games on.
Well, apparently, I play it too.
Cartoon characters.
Where's my water?
Where's my water? Yeah. Yes.
You have an image of you're looking at it now, and you're smiling. Look at it. It's just fun. You see, it's a nice game. You're like, I want to download this now. I still want to download. Don't do it, Rich, because according to Audrey, they're tracking you.
They're tracking all your details, and they can track your details and your kids' details all throughout their teenage years and into adulthood. Whoa. So try your best not to install these apps if you can get your kids to stop pestering you to install them. Yeah.
So, you know, let us know how dangerous do you think this is? Would it kind of make you second guess or think again before you install some of these apps? Do you really care that this data is being tracked? You know, does it bother you? Let us know. 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. Moving on to story number three about stuff like Waze, Google Maps, Apple Maps.
Yeah.
Go on. Apparently they're making traffic worse.
Yeah, okay, Audrey, do you use Waze or Google Maps for your navigation?
All the time.
Even if you're driving to home and office, do you still use it?
Well, to the office, just because I want to gauge what the traffic is like before I leave home. If I need to leave earlier or I can leave a little later.
Rich, do you ever
Every day.
So, and me, same with me. I stay in Ampang. BFM is in, you know, Bandar Utama. It's distance.
It's like two separate countries, 30, my friend.
35 kilometers, if I'm not mistaken, or so. And, you know, there is at least like 7 or 8 different routes that I could take to go to work. So I will use Google Maps always to tell me which is the best route. And, you know, back in the days when, before the mobile app days, right, there were, you know, few individuals who kind of know all these back alleys and, you know, always faster.
The taxi uncles,
right, yeah. They always knew these back alleys and they're like, oh, don't worry, I'll use this route and blah, 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 and like, bang, you're there within like, you know, earlier than you expected, right? Yeah. Nowadays, though, everyone has this, you know, tool or this, you know, back of the hand. They know where to go here and there.
And also with all the road works today, you need Waze and Google Maps.
This is true.
Seriously.
Yeah. So, however, though, this new information that is now you're empowered with is actually destroying this whole idea of, you know, creating an easier route, a navigation to work.
Say it ain't so.
Yeah, so, you know, commuters are now armed with, you know, mobile mapping apps, route following, you know, in the US there's Lyft and Uber, here there's, you know, Grab, and then there's software optimized truckers. They all can act with this, you know, more perfect selfishness, right? So in some happy universe, this would lead to a socially optimal outcomes, but there's a new body of research at the University of California Institute of Transportation international studies, they suggest that the reality is actually far more complicated, because in some scenarios, traffic beating apps might work for an individual, but it actually makes congestions worse overall. An autonomous vehicle is touted as the answer to, you know, trafficy streets and stuff. It could actually deepen this problem. And this problem has actually been overlooked. It's just the beginning of something that's much more worse, according to the director of UC Berkeley's Institute of Transportational Studies. So the team of researchers presented their work earlier this year at the Transportation Research Board's annual meeting, and at also at the Cal Future Conference in May earlier this year. They've also published their work examining the negative externalities of high levels of automated routing. So what they did was, you know, they went through a simulator that created this commercial transportation. It's called AIMSUN. The video kind of shows how the flow of a freeway changes in response to an accident under 2 minutes, when no drivers using these routing apps, and also when 20% of drivers use this routing app. So there are two scenarios. So when there are more app using drivers, congestion actually builds up on the ramps itself, creating more traffic on the freeway. And then the situation gets much more worse, because hundreds of people, just like you and me, would want to get on the other side of the street where the congestion isn't happening, but it was never designed to handle major traffic. So hence, now you've got congestion on your freeway or the highway itself, and then you've got congestion on the side streets and the intersections. This has happened before many times on my side. I've noticed this when I'm going to a place, PJ, for example, and, you know, there's so many inner roads within, you know, Petaling Jaya. And then you realize, like, wow, I'm actually driving through neighborhoods.
Yeah.
I'm driving through people's houses and stuff. And you realize as soon as you use that
I think you took a wrong turn.
No. It was a lot faster. It was a lot faster for the first few months, at least. And then later on, you realize there are a lot more people using that road. And then you go, hang on a minute, I'm actually now driving in people's, you know, housing area where it was never meant to handle, you know, 50, 100 over cars in that single space of time.
Right.
Because now everyone has the kind of information that those taxi uncles used to have. Everyone knows the
shortcut. Everyone knows a shortcut.
So this is something that I have been thinking about since Waze introduced their planned drive option, right? So you can actually plan, just say you want to reach Bandar Utama by 4:45, and it will tell you, okay, you know, you should leave at 4 p.m.
Yeah.
But I began to wonder if, like, just say I was heading towards a concert that started at 8 p.m. and so I set my planned drive to like 8 p.m. and it tells me to leave at 7:15. Won't it tell other people to leave at about 7:15 as well?
Right.
And
yeah.
Would that not create congestion?
It would create congestion as well. Yeah.
I've been onto this for a bit now.
But I mean, if it's doing that and it's telling, you know, 5 or 10,000 people to do the same thing, and they're all leaving at the same time, won't it then at some point tell all of those people, okay, there's a whole bunch of people doing this same thing, so we suggest you take a different route?
It will only do it when you start your journey. Then
exactly,
it recalculates
yeah.
it again,
yeah.
right? Because then the app is active, and then it talks to the AI itself, and then it does its whole recalculation of the route. And then you realize, hey, hang on a minute, you told me you leave at 7:15 earlier on, but I'm arriving later than expected, right? That's because everyone had that same idea. And also, you know, the problem is that, you know, this highways and you know, here in Malaysia, we've got, you know, this what do you call this, one of those roads, like your NKVE, and, you know, just in front of our road here, it's like a 3-lane high road and stuff, right? These roads are meant to handle large
heavy traffic,
yes,
right?
Yes.
But then now we're using the outskirts, this, you know, inner roads behind our office, you know, all these, you know, warung roads and stuff. Those are the areas where it's not meant to handle these kind of traffic, and they're not keeping up with the volume of cars that we're getting so far. And also just this, you know, empowering everyone with this knowledge of the shortcut routes. That is the problem itself. And over the last 10 years, you know, traffic routing apps become sort of like a standard accessory for driving.
Yeah.
Actually, in fact, me and Arv, we both have like a phone holder in our car, just so that, you know, we do not have to use our phone, don't have to hold a phone. We just turn on Waze and Google Maps and bang, like, you know, I know exactly how. I even know some of the shortcuts that Waze has told me. I didn't even know the roads existed.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Like, wow.
And Jeff, honestly, this is why little potholes in all those small jalans are now sinkholes.
Yes.
If you think about it, right? Because
okay,
of the heavy traffic.
So what's the solution then? Are they giving us a solution?
The solution may not be something that, you know, is in favor for Google Maps, Waze, or even Apple, who, you know, they are also, you know, Apple Maps as well. Or even like Uber and Grab and Lyft, right? So they suggest that improving these apps, it comes at a cost, because they think that maybe the apps should spread the drivers on different routes intentionally, just so that, you know, you don't have everyone going the same route.
We briefly spoke about that yesterday, about the automated cars, that if they were all headed in one direction, to break them up into, like, you know, separate kind of hives, if it were, or swarms.
And also the roads have to change as well. I think it comes down to when we're building new roads. So of course,
it's election season. Of course, the roads are going to change.
No, so when we're building new cities, right? So current cities, that, you know, current areas or major neighborhood urban areas that we have already, it's kind of congested. You can't build another lane in front of your house. Right, because that's the maximum you can do. But for new housing areas, I guess this is something that you need to consider. It's future proofing for when you have autonomous vehicles who would always take the best route ahead. It could actually be driving in front of your house.
Well, you know, the other thing is that this might be asking a bit much of Waze and Google and Apple Maps, just because they're going to have to change the essential use of that app, or what that app is meant for, from a navigation system into, well, a traffic management system. It's a, that's what they're asking.
Like the air traffic control kind of
exactly.
System.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, ladies
clever
and gents.
Boy.
Clever boy. Thank you very much. Almost time to wrap up for this segment. Music coming up, ironically, next from Australian Crawl. Easy. Oh, we should have called it Malaysian Crawl. Easy on Your Own. We're going to take a very short break. When we come back, how scientists have accidentally created a mutant enzyme that eats plastic bottles. There's hope yet. Don't forget, folks, we have the WhatsApp line open on 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. Let us know about these apps that you've installed on your phone and your devices for your kids. Do you think they're dangerous? Are you worried that they're being tracked? Or do you just not care? Let us know. 018-789-8899. BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I am, of course, joined in the studio by
Jeff Sandu
and Audrey Raj.
We've had a tweet during the break. What was it, Audrey?
Yes, so Jeremy here says, regarding the apps, definitely they would require your attention before your child installs them. Not just privacy, but maybe the cost of the apps too. Information provided or tracked can be faked or switched off too. Devices have those options.
Yes, so they do. Keep it coming in, folks. 018-789-8899. Let us know. Do you think these apps are dangerous? Are you worried about being tracked, or your kids being tracked, rather, on these apps? Or do you just not care? Yeah, let us know. Right, next story then. Story number four. Scientists accidentally create mutant enzyme that eats plastic bottles. I know it reads like something out of a Spider-Man.
Should I be worried about this? Should I run out and go into my dungeon cave now?
Scientists have created this mutant enzyme that breaks down plastic drinks bottles by accident.
It's some of the best inventions had by accident.
Yeah. So the breakthrough could help solve the global plastic pollution crisis, as we know, by enabling for the first time the full recycling of bottles. New research was spurred by the discovery back in 2016 of the first bacterium that had naturally evolved to eat plastic at a waste dump in Japan. It's always Japan, isn't it? It's always all these odd things. Godzilla's over there. Transformers are over there. Anyway, scientists have now revealed that the detailed structure of the crucial enzyme produced by the bug. So the international team tweaked the enzyme to see how it had evolved, but tests showed that they had inadvertently made the molecule even better at breaking down what they call PET, which is polyethylene terephthalate, and that's the plastic that's used for soft drinks bottles. So here's a quote. What actually turned out was we improved the enzyme, which was a bit of a shock, said Professor John McGeehan at the University of Portsmouth, who led the research. He said it's great and a real finding. So the mutant enzyme takes a few days to start breaking down the plastic, far faster than, of course, the centuries it takes when it's floating around in the oceans. But the researchers are optimistic that this can be speeded up even further and become a viable large-scale process. So what they're hoping to do is to use this enzyme to turn the plastic back into its original components, so they can literally recycle it back to plastic, which means that they won't have to dig up any more oil. And, of course, fundamentally, it should reduce the amount of plastic in the environment. Here's the interesting thing. They've said that they've given it a modest improvement on how quickly it breaks things down. Just a modest improvement.
Modest, huh?
20%. He said, but that's not the point. It's incredible because it tells you that the enzyme is not fully optimized yet. So at 20%, meaning they've got another 80% before they can get to where they think it should actually be.
Mm.
So, you know, other enzymes are used for stuff like washing powders and biofuel and, you know, it all stuff is decent. I mean, I know Audrey had a question earlier on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if this bacteria is eating plastic,
yes.
Is it releasing some sort of gas or is this bacteria growing in its petri dish?
See,
will
my...
we have another issue to deal with,
right.
You know?
So, I when
remember
you...
it's in Japan. So
exactly, right?
Well, we need Jaegers.
You start with Japan accidentally created mutant that eats plastics. The only image that comes to my head is this small little green goblets that
glowing.
Yeah, that glow. If you've seen what's the Ghostbusters thing, right? So you see one of those, you know, and they have this green smoke glow that goes around them. They're really tiny.
Yeah.
They've got really sharp teeth with like evil eyes, and then they just go on all these plastics. I have a really big worry here that they might just look at you and they just chase you and they start eating your legs and your arms, and the next thing you know, you're just left with bones, just like in the cartoons.
And that's what happens when you play too much Where's My Water? Right. Anyway, but so to answer your question, Ords, sorry, Jeff. Here's a quote by Oliver Jones, who's a chemist at RMIT, University of Melbourne. And what he says is enzymes are non-toxic, biodegradable, and can be produced in large amounts by microorganisms. There's still a long way to go before you can recycle large amounts of plastic with enzymes, and reducing the amount of plastic produced in the first place might perhaps be preferable, but this is certainly a step in the right direction. It then goes on to another professor from the University of Manchester agreed that the enzyme could be useful, but did add a full life cycle assessment would be needed to ensure that the technology does not solve one environmental problem, waste, at the expense of others, including additional greenhouse gas emissions. So they are not 100% sure yet.
In the future, you would see, I think, the innovation of the trash bin or our, you know, home rubbish bin itself, right? Because right now it's not changed for
correct.
Like, what, 20, 30 years?
Or longer.
Or longer, right?
But the dumpster is still a dumpster.
The dumpster
today,
is still a dumpster, right? But I guess in the future, maybe with this kind of technology where they would be able to release certain type of, you know, bacteria that would combat against the waste, where, you know, where your bin would literally recycle itself.
You just want to be able to open your bin and it go... So you're looking
that
for
cool,
it.
Would cool.
Wouldn't it
that
just?
That would be really cool. You'd be living in like, you know, the Jetsons kind of
It'd
world.
It'd be brilliant.
Like, yeah.
It'd be brilliant.
But for me, this story was like the best news that I read today. Just because there are about 1 million plastic bottles that are bought every minute around the globe.
Such a scary image.
1 million every minute,
such
right?
Such a scary thought.
So, you know, something needs to be done about it. So maybe this enzyme is the solution.
And it's an accidental invention as well.
Yeah.
Another one to the list.
Right. Yeah. Time for a break. A couple of songs back to back. We've got Ben Folds with Zach and Sarah, followed by the Ozark Mountain Daredevils, of course. They're playing Jackie Blue here on BFM 89.9. When we get back, how airports are using smart glass to make you spend more money because we are not smart people. Don't go anywhere. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Before Friday materializes, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bites. My name is Rich Bradbury, in the studio with
Audrey Raj,
Jeff Sandhu.
Last story of the day, how airports are using smart glass to make you spend more money. Do we not spend enough money in airports?
I spend way too much already.
Right, we pay a fortune to get there. There's duty free. They charge
everything
way
is just expensive.
Everything
like, if I just want to buy a bottle of water, it's like, you know, three times more than
exactly.
what I would get outside.
Exactly.
Right? So I spend
like
way too much money.
Far too much money.
What is going to make you spend
more money
at these airports? Now, this is baffling, right?
Mm.
So you know how some sunglasses can adapt to sunlight and then
dark,
you know?
Mm.
Yeah. So, you know, one might ask, why haven't we had that technology in our homes or at work with the glass panels, the window panels that we use in our buildings, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the wait may soon be over. The tinted world of tomorrow is coming, and airports...
The tinted world of tomorrow.
And airports are super interested. So in a test that happened last year, Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport outfitted one of its gates with a new type of smart glass that can adjust for sunlight exposure. So the obvious point of this was to keep travelers from getting overheated, but the exercise also brought a more lucrative benefit.
Oh, apparently. Yes, go on then.
It turns out that a cooler, darker bar in the cooler, darker bar in that gate of the airport, even during the day, encouraged an extra round or two for travelers who are using the bar.
This is dangerous because I am going to the Dallas International Airport in 2 weeks' time. Oh no!
Go check it out. And in the duty-free zone, where sales are usually down during the day, a cooler temperature allowed travelers to linger or dwell around the area even more, which directly led to an increase in sales. So the
this is very dangerous.
Yeah, so the lesson was clear for the airport. Remove heat and glare from a glass and bar, and people will dally longer and spend more, not only in the bar, but in your duty-free area. And also what it does for the seating and the carpets in that lounge area, right? Because, you know, it was cooler, the temperature was better, but also you could still look out and enjoy the
Why have we not done this before? I mean, it makes common sense, right?
Exactly. Because we spend way too much money already.
No. I mean, why have they not had tinted windows in airports? Every single airport you walk through is like a greenhouse, is like an oven. You know,
it's nice to see outside. And I guess, you know, this new technology makes sense because, you know, it can do its tint automatically. And it can readjust to its,
This company that produces this glass is a 10-year-old Silicon Valley company. They target commercial offices, hospitals, higher education facilities, airports, and other places where customer satisfaction is a priority. The technology is intended to reduce light by activating internal shading and by extension reducing the ambient temperature. The glass installations have all internet protocol and electrical power connections to allow for a minute adjustment and programming. And what they say is that it can lower heating and cooling costs by as much as 20%, even with installation costs that are 20 or 30% higher than your normal traditional glass. The expected energy savings over a building's lifespan may make the choice a no-brainer. And here's what the chief business officer of this company said. We spend 90% of our time indoors. The things that really matter are light, air quality, temperature, and sound. And we impact at least three of those in a positive way. So, yeah. Great idea.
There are some concept cars that have actually embedded this technology into the windows, the windscreen, the back window itself, because of, you know, it's hot in your car, especially here in Malaysia, right? And everyone just will slap on a dark tint. But then it becomes a problem at night because it's just too dark to see anything outside, right? So we have like that limit where you can only put like 60% and 40% and stuff. So there are some concept cars who actually have already tried this new technology where it would adjust according to the temperature that you set in the car. So instead of just using the air conditioning to blast, you know, full aircon to lower the temperature, there are other elements that you can control
just,
the
just
temperature.
Like glasses, just like the glasses.
It will be in the houses soon as well, in apartments soon. Yeah, I would love it. Yeah.
All right, we have to wrap up, ladies and gents. You know, we've been through the show so far. We had a huge amount of tweets today. Thank you very much for your contributions. But do keep it coming through tomorrow, of course. We will be having more stories for you to contribute to. And the number, just in case you've forgotten, 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. Let's quickly run through the stories that we covered, just in case you missed anything. We started off with...
Don't let your kids use apps because they're collecting data on your children and on yourself that they can, you know, collect and use even when your kids are teenagers and adults.
And of course on Jeff. Also, Amazon are launching international shopping from the US, expanding, of course, from their US shores.
And Google Maps and Waze might actually be making traffic worse. If you've noticed, you've been driving around neighborhoods these days.
Scientists accidentally created a mutant enzyme that eats plastic bottles.
Yes, and the final story, the final story on airports using smart glass to make you spend more money. I will spend more money on this glass in my house. I think it's a great
idea. Yeah. Don't forget, if you missed any part of the show, you can download the app from the Apple App Store or, of course, from Google Play to listen back at your leisure. But don't go anywhere because coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it is, of course, the Breakfast Grill replay. Since listing on Bursa's main market in July of last year, construction group AdvanceCon has bagged several projects, including a contract for works on the West Coast Expressway worth over 370 million ringgit. The Breakfast Grill spoke to the group COO Yo and Tai on the company's progress and their prospects. Don't go anywhere. That's all coming up in just a few minutes. My name is Rich Bradbury on behalf of Mr. Jeff Sandu and, of course, Audrey Raj. the wonderful Audrey Raj, the best co-host in the world, Audrey Raj, and Arvind Yuvaraj, who's in the corner giggling his little head off. This has been Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.